Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning, it's 6:04 and welcome to Friday. Do you realize today is the beginning of August? And we're glad you're spending the first day of August 2014 with us. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8. And I appreciate you listening. We seek to be informative and challenging, hopeful and helpful all at the same time as you get your day started. And we're so glad you're supporting us here at Faith Radio Network as well. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. Coming up later this morning, we're going to hear from some very interesting people and get some very interesting insights. Dr. David Stevens, he is the CEO of a group known as the Christian Medical and Dental Association. It is the nation's largest faith-based organization of physicians and healthcare providers. And he really does speak on behalf of about 16,000 medical doctors around the country. Dr. Stevens will join us in just about half an hour from now to give us some perspective on what in the world is going on with healthcare in our country. Now, we have allowed our government, empowered our government to bring to bear the Affordable Care Act, the ACA law, as it were. It's also euphemistically as kind of a nickname referred to as Obamacare. President Barack Obama refers to it as Obamacare, so I will call it Obamacare. This is changing dramatically the work of doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals. It's also changing how we receive and how we do not receive healthcare as patients. So Dr. Stevens joins us coming up later this morning for that. Also, we'll ask Dr. Stevens to weigh in on growing concerns about the Ebola virus. This is not just something over there somewhere. It is happening on other continents, and we are treated to reports here in the U.S. and throughout the free world that this is the worst strand of the Ebola virus that has ever been known in the history of the world. So we are told there are concerns that it has arrived on the North American continent. We referred to this a little bit yesterday on the program, concerns about somebody arriving in Florida with the Ebola virus, possibly, and somebody in the province of Ontario in Canada. So we'll ask Dr. Stevens about this. Again, he joins us at about 6:35 this morning, and that's forthcoming. Also, John Stone Street, a gentleman that you hear frequently, several times a week here on the Faith Radio Network. He's one of two voices on the Breakpoint program. John Stone Street from the Breakpoint organization will weigh in. He's got a brand new book out, and he's saying some very interesting things about, I guess I'll call it, the debate over the definition of marriage in our country. And it's not, if you have not heard any of John Stone Street's commentaries with Breakpoint recently about the debate over the definition of marriage, you need to listen in. He'll be with us later into the second hour of our program. It's challenging. I happen to think he's moving the discussion in a very, very productive direction. But it will likely rankle some feathers. It will likely make some people uncomfortable when you hear what he has to say, and that's okay. I think we need to turn the corner and shake things up a little bit in the discussion. I'm not asking anybody or suggesting that anyone should abandon their theology, but John Stone Street has, I believe, the next step in the process of thoughtfully and biblically dialoguing and addressing this issue of the definition of marriage in our culture. So all of this coming up, I have some thoughts on what August is about, believe it or not. I know, it's another day on the calendar, right? Let me read to you a little bit of the history of August as we roll into the first day of August 2014. We'll get to that coming up in just moments. Also, when we return, Dr. Richard Land, formerly of the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. Richard Land, he is now a president of an entire Evangelical Christian Seminary, Southern Evangelical Seminary, Charlotte, North Carolina. Dr. Richard Land was with us yesterday here on the program. I'm going to let you hear some of the highlights, some of the key issues he was addressing on the program. We'll get to that next. It's now 6:08. Welcome to it. It's the Faith Radio Network. It's Friday, and I'm Austin Hill.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It is now 6:10, and again, thank you for listening. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8. Dr. Richard Land, I guess academically, we can identify him as a philosopher. His doctorate is in the academic discipline of philosophy. Anyway, the philosopher that is Dr. Richard Land, L-A-N-D, he was on the program yesterday. And Dr. Richard Land, for many years, was with the Southern Baptist Convention and their Ethics Research Center. Southern Baptist Church denomination has a very fine, in my view, very fine team of very thoughtful scholars that research current issues in our culture that really beg for analysis through the lenses of our Christian ethical and moral framework. But that said, Dr. Richard Land is now the president of a seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina. We invited him onto the program. He was talking about this this growing trend of young adults in the millennial generation not getting married. And he had some rather startling, eye-opening statistics anyway about the proclivity with which young adults are just simply rejecting the tradition and the institution of marriage. But from there, the conversation gets into guys not stepping up and being husbands and fathers, and the government stepping in and becoming sort of a surrogate husband and provider and father and all kinds of things. So this is just a little synopsis, a little snapshot, if you will, of my conversation with Dr. Richard Land yesterday in the 7 o'clock hour. Listen in. This is fascinating. Hit it.
It looks like the millennials, unless they start getting married really rapidly in their 30s, we're going to have less than 70% of men and women who will actually ever get married in the millennial generation. I mean, think about that. 30% or more will not get married. I think that one of the overwhelming reasons is that this is the largest generation in history have their children of divorce. They come from broken homes. And we know, there's lots of research now that shows that divorce of parents is not a trauma that children get over quickly. It has cascading, continuing pain and results in their lives. Mm-hmm. They're fearful of making commitment. They're still hurt by the betrayal of their parents' trust. I had one professor at the University of Texas at Austin tell me, he said, you know, he says, I've had students say to me, he said, I had a young man say to me last year, he said, I want more than anything in the world to find a woman and marry her and love her for life, but I don't think that's possible. My parents couldn't do it.
Very interesting.
And so I think the biggest reason is that they are the children of divorce more than any generation previously, and the children of illegitimacy. I mean, you know, this is a generation that was being raised when the illegitimacy rates jumped from the teens into the 41%.
Sure. Well, speak to us, if you would, if we have this 30% or more of this millennial demographic that will never be married, and I think that's a correct interpretation of what you just said there. If that is the case, does that necessarily mean, Dr. Land, that they won't procreate and have children?
No, it doesn't. It means they'll have fewer children. It means that that their children will also be have a higher potential to be malformed and scarred emotionally because they don't have the mother and the father that God intended for all children to have.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, mountains of evidence that show that children who are reared in a two-parent family, a mom and dad who are married and stay married to each other, have enormously better outcomes as healthy adults than children who are raised in broken homes or in single-parent homes. You know, just take the poverty rate. If you're born into a home with a mother and a father who are married to each other and they stay married to each other, you've got a 5% chance of ever being in poverty. If you're not, you have a 35% chance of being married in poverty. It's a 7 times greater chance.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Land, he's president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's with us on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network as we talk about marriage among the millennial generation. You have said before, and you've addressed over the last decade or more a broad array of public policy issues, but you have said before that government in many ways is replacing the role of the spouse in the context of households and relationships. How is government replacing the role of a husband or wife?
Well, if you remember back during the 2012 campaign, the Obama campaign had a advertisement for a girl named Julia who goes through her whole life, and the government helps her get her college degree. The government helps her while she's getting started in life. She has a baby, and the government helps her with that, mm-hmm. and then she goes on into retirement. They never even mentioned a husband. The government took the place of the husband. There's a reason why 60% or more of single women in this country vote for the Democratic Party. They look for the government to be the husband they don't have and replace the husband they don't have when it comes to income assistance, when it comes to social assistance. And, of course, this is putting an enormous strain on government because the whole social welfare system is based upon the assumption of a population pyramid. Mm-hmm. With more younger people supporting fewer older people. But when you abort 54 million babies, then you have an inverted pyramid. And that's why there's such a tremendous strain on Social Security and Medicare, because you have fewer and fewer people who are contributing to more and more retirees.
Dr. Richard Land from Southern Evangelical Seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina, from our program yesterday. You can hear the full audio on our mobile-friendly website at myfaithradio.com. We'll also have a written synopsis of that posted later today. Glad you're with us. Thank you for listening. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. It's now 6:17, and you're on the Faith Radio Network. Welcome to it. Friday is here. August has begun. Can you believe it? My goodness, weren't we just putting our New Year's resolutions together? Just, you know what, a few weeks ago after the Christmas and New Year holiday? Anyway, August 1st is underway. Some thoughts on the month of August coming up in just a few moments. Also, in about 15 minutes from now, Dr. David Stevens, he is a physician, but he's also with the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And we'll ask him to weigh in on what in the world is going on and what is not going on with health care in our country. And also ask him to give us his assessment of what's happening with the spread of the Ebola virus. This is certainly something worthy of our prayers, for sure, but other proactive measures are warranted as well, at least in some regions of the world and possibly some regions of our own country. So we'll talk with Dr. Stevens about that. Coming up, as I said, in about 15 minutes from now, Miriam Ibrahim update. Miriam Ibrahim, of course, a lady from the Sudan who is married to our fellow American. Daniel Wani is her name. They have 2 young children. Because they're married and dad is a U.S. citizen, the children are also citizens of this nation as well. As recently as 5-6 weeks ago, Miriam Ibrahim was sentenced to die in a prison in the Sudan for nothing more than the fact that she has chosen Christianity and chosen Christ as her savior and has shrugged off and, as far as I can tell, kind of ignored the mandates and the heavy-handed edict, shall we say, of Islam in our country. Now, we've talked about her before, and you've probably followed the story at least somewhat. You've probably seen that striking photo that's been all over the national news media earlier this year, and certainly it's been shown many, many times in Christian news media publications. A very striking photo of a formally dressed in wedding attire, a very attractive young couple, very beautiful. Miriam Ebrahim, her handsome husband, Daniel Wani, and they've got some flowers around them. It's a wedding photo, professionally done wedding photo. They're made up very, very nicely. And then you've seen that headline above it, woman sentenced to die, or mother sentenced to die. Well, she, by the grace of God, and I think the good works of some very thoughtful people here in the U.S. and, interestingly enough, within the government of Italy, she has been freed from the oppressors in Sudan. We are told that later today she's supposed to arrive in Philadelphia and be greeted by the mayor of the city of Philadelphia, Mayor Michael Nutter, who's a very thoughtful guy. I find Mayor Nutter to be a very intriguing public figure. Mayor Nutter is going to welcome her to City Hall in the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia. Then we anticipate that Miriam Ebrahim will arrive in New Hampshire, of all places. Now, this is a success story, and we should all give thanks, but we also need to continue to pray for brothers and sisters living in other parts of the world, those who are seeking to follow Christ, under enormously, enormously oppressive, even deadly, and very violent conditions. First and foremost, the Christians, what few are left, I guess, in the country of Iraq. There's a very striking editorial today published at ChristianityToday.com, and the editorial writes that only America can save Christians in Iraq right now. Only America. And yet at the same time, it would seem to me anyway that the United States of America, we lost the will to continue to put up the military might and, I guess, spend the money and put forth the human capital to prop up what was once a potentially promising free country of Iraq. I mean, American blood was spilled, lives were lost, and hundreds of millions of dollars were spent toppling the very wicked regime that was the Saddam Hussein government in the country of Iraq. You know all about that, so do I, the so-called war in Iraq. There was potential there for an elective representational government and a society that would be welcoming, truly pluralistic and diverse and welcoming and inclusive of Christians. Very westernized it was back only 5-6 years ago, and not the case anymore. Iraq, the accomplishments of Iraq have been scuttled as military forces have been withdrawn out of Iraq, and now as we've witnessed these reports, I mean, this has just been a bloody, ugly summer. There's no way around it for the plight of Christians and the cause of the church around the globe. But that said, doesn't mean we shouldn't pray, doesn't mean we shouldn't let our voices be heard with our elected officials if indeed we want a more sound foreign policy and a government that does seek to uphold liberty and religious tolerance around the world. That said, when we come back, some thoughts on the month of August. Dr. David Stevens joining us in just about 10 minutes from now as we talk about the Ebola virus breakout around the world and health care. How do we get health care anymore in the United States of America? All this and more just ahead. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 6:25. Network. Yesterday, at about this time, I mentioned that later in the day, at 12 noon, on Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem, Neil would be talking with an author, Jody Watson, and discussing her book, Purge with Passion. It's about decluttering. And my wife heard the promo, and she said, yeah, we should listen to that together. So anyway, speaking of decluttering, here's a little bit of how that conversation went yesterday. Neil Stavem on Connecting Faith with Jody Watson.
Yeah, the vision area started because, you know, I'm always walking into chaos and mess. That's why I'm there. People have called me to help them with it. And people are overwhelmed and it's very stressful and they can't see the way through. I tend to be able to look at a space and be able to go, okay, it looks like this today, but I can see what it can look like and I know how to get it there. But my clients, weren't. In the very beginning, they're sort of there, and they can't see that. They don't have that vision of what it can be like yet. They don't see it. And so the vision area for me was just a way to sort of show them a little bit of that in a very small, manageable way by clearing, you know, taking, it could be an end table, it could be a countertop, a desk, whatever area was appropriate, but that was small and manageable that we could actually organize there and then, like not take too long about it, make it look beautiful, make it look the way they were striving for, to show them like, yes, it can be like this. And then it serves different purposes. You know, it not only is a vision area that can give them hope, because it can be a long journey to get from chaos to order, but that they can also practice at keeping organized. Because that's one of the things, you know, the reason things are usually chaos and mess, they haven't gotten there overnight, it's because of our habits and what we do have gotten us there. And so it's important to, in the process of, you know, moving from chaos to order, to learn new habits and learn new ways of doing things. If you keep doing things the way you always did, then that things are going to end up the way they always have. So practicing how to be organized is a really important part of the journey to order. And so that's another reason that the vision area is so great, because it actually provides that on a week-to-week basis, you know, and then growing out from there, obviously. But, yeah.
And I assume that the practicing is maybe it's like going on a weight loss program or, you know, bodybuilding or whatever it is, that, you know, we're not going to change our body style in, you know, in 2 days. I mean, we have to take little baby steps.
I think that's really a key. I think trying to change too much, even when you're really willing and you really want to change, you know, change doesn't happen overnight. Not sustainable, long-lasting, transformative change. It does take time. And starting with, I mean, one thing, like changing one thing at a time or maybe two, and then really practicing that until it becomes a habit, till it becomes automatic, where you don't have to think about it anymore. Like you may come in and throw things down on the dining room table, let's say, and your dining room table is always cluttered with stuff and the family never gets to sit down and eat dinner, for instance. So now you want to change that. You want the dining table to be an area where the family can come together and eat meals, which is what it's for, and will strengthen your family and all of the good things that will come of that. So how do you change from that coming in the door and throwing things down and actually shifting to a whole new way? And it's finding homes for things, like where things go, and actually putting them away and taking that effort to do it. And in the beginning, it's hard, but eventually you do it enough times and you'll just, as you came in and automatically threw on the dining room table, you will automatically come in and hang it up where you decided to hang it up or put it away where you decided to put it away. And then it's automatic. You're not thinking about it anymore. You're just doing it. And so that's the goal of changing. And so you can't do too many of those at once, maybe one or two. And then once you've got that down, then you add another one or two things.
Jody Watson, author of Purge with Passion, a book about decluttering, featured on Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem yesterday at noon. Coming up on today's Connecting Faith edition, Joe Rathmanner will discuss about how to teach our daughters to set boundaries in their relationships. Author Allison Botke will join the program. It's Connecting Faith, weekdays at noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. When we come back, what in the world is happening and is not happening with health care in the United States of America? And how seriously do we take concerns about the spread of the Ebola virus, even in North America? Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, he joined us next. It's now 6:31. I'm Austin Hill. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network.
Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
6:35 still to come. We have some thoughts on the month of August. What do you know about the month of August historically? What do you think you know? It's just another page on the calendar, another little box on the Google form or whatever, right? But I'll tell you things maybe you've never known or forgotten about August. We'll get to that. Also, John Stone Street from the Breakpoints Ministry. Some thoughts on the debate, if you will, over the definition of marriage in our culture. How about health care? How have your insurance premiums appeared to you over the last several months? Do you have access to the health care that you and your family need? Joining us to talk about this, also other medical concerns, not only here on the North American continent, but elsewhere around the world, Dr. David Stevens. He is the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, the nation's largest group, faith-based group of doctors and medical professionals. Dr. David Stevens, welcome to our program. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's so good to be with you, Austin.
Pleasure to speak to you. Year one of the Affordable Care Act, or the Obamacare law, as it were. Where do you begin to analyze this, Doctor?
Well, it's not easy. And a lot of things we don't know yet. We're going to know a lot more after this first year of how expensive this actually is for people who are on that system. But we do know that it has increased premiums for lots of people, and a lot of folks, of course, are concerned about that because it's seen their premiums go up. Some studies have demonstrated that on average about 42% of people across the country have had their premiums go up. There's things people really like about it. Of course, getting free preventive care, mammograms and immunizations and contraceptives, and the list just goes on and on. And people like the fact that their kids can stay on their parents' program older age than they used to be able to. But I think the real question is, this is just really going to be the Affordable Care Act, and what we're seeing so far doesn't suggest it's going to be, because you can't give all these things away for free. I can increase the number of kids with ice cream cones in their hands if I decrease the cost and or hand them out free on the street. But we all just got to be concerned about what this is going to do to the national debt and how expensive it's going to be for the system, and can we sustain it?
My 15-year-old son, who just completed his sophomore year in high school, and this is kind of a sad commentary on multiple fronts, but his high school math teacher announced to his class back earlier this spring, "Well, it looks like I qualify for Obamacare subsidy, so I think I'll sign up." And my son said, "You realize, of course, my generation is going to pay for that. What do you think about that, teacher?" And this is kind of there's no free ice cream, I think, is your point here, Dr. Stevens. And our kids and grandkids will be paying this debt, or at least so it would seem to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so, as the debt continues to increase. This is going to be probably $2.5 trillion over 10 years. And it's really not going to solve the problem. Even after all this is done, they're expecting that about 30% of people still will not have insurance. So it was very much sweetened for the middle class, not just dealing with the most poor. It actually provides supplemental or additional payments from the government for your insurance up to 400% of the poverty level. I'm very concerned about what's happening in healthcare. We need reform. There's no doubt about that, and our system's broken. But I'm afraid that what has happened here isn't going to really solve the problem, but in the long run, exacerbate the problem. And a lot of people think that it's just the step to a single payer where the government controls all insurance as it does in Canada and London and England and UK, and it's just a system where it's a single-payer system, and there's concern about that as well. I've worked in a country where that's the case overseas, mm-hmm. in Kenya, and it causes problems.
Dr. David Stevens, he's the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. As it pertains to the Affordable Care Act, or maybe the not-so-Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, one of the concerns I have is, as merely a patient, I'm not in that category of medical professionals that you're a part of, but as a patient, I look at the insurance industry, and over the course of my lifetime, this has been certainly an increasing problem, as I see it anyway. The insurance industry really does come between me and my doctor. If I go to my physician that I prefer to go to on a regular basis for regular checkups or treatment or what have you, at least part of the conversation just about every time is, well, will the insurance pay for what I need to do? And I fear at times that my physician is making choices with my health care based on what he can be compensated for. That's not his fault, but that's the way the system is set up. Now it would appear to me, again as a layperson, Dr. Stevens, that not only does the insurance industry come between me, a patient, and you, a physician, now the government is in between us. What is that relationship like, that doctor-patient relationship like in this current milieu from the healthcare provider's vantage point, the doctor, the nurse, the physician assistant, and so forth? What's that like on your side of the dial, so to speak?
It is extremely frustrating for healthcare professionals, and specifically Christian healthcare professionals who've gone into this for the right reasons, is to serve and to help people. And increasingly, they're playing Mother May I and spending enormous amounts of time dealing with insurance companies trying to get permission to do this or permission to do that. And I'm sure many of our listeners have had experiences with this. I just had my brother-in-law have a back problem, and he called me, and I said, that sounds pretty serious. You need to get in quickly. This can be pressing your nerve. And, you know, the insurance company said, no, you've got to go through all these steps before you can actually even think about surgery. And I'm saying, no, this is an emergency. He's going to lose nerve function to his leg and have a dropped foot, permanent problems if this isn't handled. And it took a lot of effort on my part and his doctor to get the surgery he needed. And I was absolutely right. And so they had a protocol. You take this medicine first, if that didn't work, you take this medicine, because those are the cheap things, and then we'll consider the more expensive. But in many situations, you've got to go right to the solving the problem and not put things off because damage can occur. And so this is a huge frustration. We understand they're trying to keep costs down and keep insurance costs down, but it's gone too far.
It would appear that way to me. Dr. David Stevens, he is the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Dr. Stevens, let's talk about the Ebola virus. And it's possible spread to the North American continent. We'll get to that in a few moments. But you have served as a physician on another continent. You served in the country of Kenya, I believe, as a missionary doctor, as I recall. And you know very well healthcare and health conditions, public health conditions even, in very, very remote and, I would say, third world regions of the world. As you see it, is what do we make of these headlines to say, oh, my goodness, this is the worst strand of the Ebola virus we have ever known before in the history of the world? What, how do we interpret that?
That's true, and this one seems to be more infectious, and it's spread further, over 1,200 cases in all the years since 1976 when this was first discovered. The most cases we've had is around 600, and it's still spreading, especially in Liberia. And, of course, we're all very concerned about Dr. Kent Brantley and Ms. Wrightball that worked with him with Samaritan's Purse at the Elwha Hospital there. I've got a lot of friends at Elwha. Kent's actually a CMDA member, came up through our student ranks, so was a leader on our campus at Indiana University, and worked with one of our graduates, a missionary doctor, in his residency. I just trained him last year in medical missions. We have a conference for new medical missionaries, and Kent and Amber are here, so we're very close to them. And he laid down his life and took great risks for the people that he served, and I think all of us need to be in prayer for him. But this is a serious thing. The chance of it getting to the U.S. and spreading are really not great, because unlike the normal flu that you think about where you spread it through coughing and droplets, this has to be spread through bodily fluids. In other words, you've had to get blood or other bodily fluids, saliva or whatever, on you and contaminate you and get in through your mucous membrane. So it takes direct contact. That doesn't mean it's not dangerous, but it's not like bird flu or something like that where somebody can get on a plane and spread it to everybody in the plane just by coughing. So, yeah, we need to be concerned about it, but at the same time, I think more so, we need to be in prayer for those suffering from it, because it's a huge issue in West Africa.
Dr. David Stevens, he is the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Stevens, stand by, quick break. We have more questions for you. We'll continue in just a moment. It's 6:45. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go anywhere. Good morning and welcome to it. It's Friday. It's August 1st. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8. Dr. David Stevens is the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, America's largest faith-based organization involving and associating medical professionals. He's on our guest line here on the program. Dr. Stevens, I want to follow up on the spread of the Ebola virus. You were saying that probably the greater concern is the plight for us in America. The greater concern is the plight of American missionaries serving abroad. That's of greater concern than fears about the spread of the Ebola virus here on our North American continent. Did I hear that correctly?
You did. You did. I mean, there's always a risk, but the thing about Ebola is that you can contain it fairly easily, in the sense that unless you touch the body fluids from someone infected by it, you're very unlikely to get infected. It's not like an epidemic of the flu that's passed by people in the hallway or the elevator or that type of thing because they coughed or that type of thing on you. But, you know, and great respect for those who are laying down their lives and putting themselves at risk. I was picked up a document the other day, and it was a letter from an early church leader about the epidemic that happened in Rome, where over 5 million people died of smallpox, and everybody fled the city and went to the mountains trying to escape it, except the Christians. And they stayed, and they laid down their lives for the people that were suffering. And I think the, you know, Kent and others that are doing that in Africa, and missionaries all the time there, deserve our respect and our prayers for their willingness to put themselves at risk in sacrificial service to help others, knowing that they're taking great risk.
That's very well stated. Dr. Stevens, to follow up and to close the gap, so to speak, on the issue of the Affordable Care Act and the Obamacare law and such, what do you say to that person? It seems like there's so much media attention focused on the dysfunctionality of the federal law, the cost and the waste of it, and the various state insurance exchanges and such. And then there's a lot of media attention on those who are maybe becoming too reliant or too dependent on their governments for providing all their needs, food and health care included. What do you say to that hardworking mom or dad or couple that's scared to death that their insurance plan is going to get canceled, or the cost of it is going to go up so high that they can't afford it anymore, and they're just wondering what comes next? We see court decisions with the Obamacare law moving in both directions. It's just absolute chaos. What do you say to that couple that's trying to be responsible, but they don't know what they're going to have to be responsible for?
Well, one thing I would consider is one of the Christian Share insurance programs that's out there, where you actually share costs with other Christians across the country. They tend to be less costly. They're not controlled by the Affordable Care Act. That's one way forward. I think on a system, or looking at the system of healthcare in this country, we've got to address the key issue. The reason people can't get insurance is it costs too much. You know, I run an organization with over, you know, 125 staff, and our insurance rates are going up 10 to 25% a year. And that's just unsustainable. And it costs, you know, costs half as much for some of our lower paid employees to just provide them insurance as it does their salary. And so their salary's not going up as much, and their co-pays are going up, and it's just a mess. And I tell people the cheapest thing to do is get on an airplane, go overseas, and get your care in a mission hospital where people will care for you, and the costs are low. But we've managed to make health care so expensive that more and more people are not getting it, and we've got to address the root problem, and that's more competition, realizing that we can't grab every new technology and at huge expense, and we need to take care of the basic health care needs and lower those costs for people. And that's often done best by competition, not by the government, as we've seen with the VA system. If you want a system like the VA for everybody in the country, you hand all health care over to the government.
Very interesting. We are still blessed to live in a nation where you and I and every individual citizen has a voice in how the laws are created, how the policies are crafted. We have a voice in our government. As responsible U.S. citizens, I guess harnessing that liberty in a responsible sort of way, what do we tell members of Congress that we want?
I think we want to deal with the root issue, cost, in the sense that we've got to get it down. We want this available. We don't want people discriminated against, and rightly so, that have serious diseases, which has happened in the past. You get sick, then you can't get insurance, which doesn't make any sense. Let insurance companies compete across state borders. Now, insurance companies can only work within one state at a time. For example, there's only 3 insurance companies that operate in California. How much competition is that?
That's not a competitive market.
Yeah, and then they do lots of things to increase enormous bureaucracy. I mean, 15-20% of a physician's time is taken up with bureaucracy and meeting standards and doing all sorts of things that the government demands, that doctors and nurses have less and less time to do what they got into the profession to do. And so that drains away. We have huge problems with malpractice. And, you know, if somebody's been injured, they deserve a recompense. But most of them are nuisance suits. 80-90% of suits against doctors are thrown out. But they go through the system for years, drag the doctor, and the only people that make money are the lawyers. So we need to look at this comprehensively and provide good health care in this country. And we can do it. Other countries have done it. And we are losing our competitive edge. We have the technology, but we do not have the affordability, and that's the huge issue.
Dr. David Stevens, a voice of reason in difficult times. He's the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Stevens, hope you'll come back and join us another time. Thanks very much for spending time with us today. We hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, appreciate it.
6:53, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. It's Friday. It's August 1st. Welcome to it. So much more just ahead. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go anywhere. Network Live the Promise with Susie Larson. That airs weekday afternoons 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. Yesterday, Susie spoke with Dr. David Garrison from the International Mission Board about the revival of Muslims that's taking place around the world. Listen to this.
That kind of faith and conviction to come to Christ and stay put for the sake of witnessing to those who could kill you is something that is just beyond so many of us. So say more about that.
Well, it is, Susie. In fact, one of the things that surprises me is that I found some people in the West, they don't understand, and they say, you know, these Muslims who come to faith and then stay in their community, they must be cowards, and that's why they're not coming out and joining a church. Well, there may be some cases of that, but that certainly wasn't what I found. In fact, I found just the opposite. I met with a group on Christmas Day 2011. I sat on the floor with 20 Muslim background believers who were all leaders in their community. I mean, they were imams and they were sheikhs and leaders in the Muslim community. And I asked them, why don't you just leave the Muslim community, come out and form a Christian church that's separate? And one of the women spoke up and she said, it was interesting. She said, you know, God became a man so that he could reach men. If God had wanted to reach hyenas, he would have become a hyena. Said, if we're going to reach our community, we have to stay in our community. And I was moved by that because I could see that she was taking a risk. In fact, they pointed to one fellow in the group there on the floor sitting across from me. They said, he's an imam. He leads a mosque. And he's been teaching Jesus in the mosque from the New Testament. Some of the leaders finally rose up and said, you can't teach this. You've got to get out of here. And they tried to expel him from the mosque. Now, what he did was striking because a law had been passed in that country just a couple of years prior to this that said within the mosque, the Muslim community has the right to implement Sharia law. In the rest of the community, there was a separation of religion and state. But in the mosque, they said, the Muslim community can implement Sharia law. And what this fellow did, rather than leave the mosque, he went to court and demanded the right to stay in his mosque and continue to teach about Jesus. What he was saying was he was going to court to fight for the right to die so that others could know who Jesus was. This fellow was not a coward. This was a fellow who was determined to save as many as possible before he himself was killed.
Dr. David Garrison, a guest on Live the Promise with Susie Larson. He, of course, is from the International Mission Board. That was an amazing conversation. By the way, you can find the full scope of it on our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. Now, coming up on Live the Promise this afternoon, from 3 till 5, Susie will be talking with Arlene Pelican as they discuss maintaining a positive attitude in marriage. That's Live the Promise. Susie Larson, your host, now in a new two-hour format, weekdays 3 till 5 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:58. It's Friday. It's August 1st. Welcome to it, and thank you for being here. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come, our guest, John Stonestreet. New thoughts on the conversation over the definition of marriage in our country. We'll get to it coming up. The news is next. Stay right here.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's 7:05. Welcome to it. Friday underway. August 1st underway. Can you believe August is already here? My goodness, I was just raking Christmas out of the living room the other day, you know? Cleaning up all the stuff and moving a tree outside, figuring out where it would be disposed of. Anyway, yes, August is underway, and we are, note to the students in the audience, we are well past the midpoint of summer, just so you know. School is around the corner, and better start planning for it. But glad you're here. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8. Here on the Faith Radio Network, and we appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support of the Faith Radio Network. Find us anytime on our mobile-friendly website at myfaithradio.com. Coming up in just about half an hour from now, and I don't want to make a bigger deal of this than it really is, but I do think that it's probably warranted to sort of issue kind of a, not a disclaimer, but just a little note to the wise, shall we say. John Stonestreet, who is one of two voices, he and Eric Metaxas, they sound strikingly similar, by the way. John Stonestreet and Eric Metaxas, they are the hosts of the, what we would call in the broadcasting industry, the short-form programming feature called Breakpoint. That's from the Breakpoint Ministries from the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview. And Chuck Colson himself used to host Breakpoint in his departure from the organization. And then after his passing, of course, John Stonestreet and Eric Metaxas, they write this content and voice it and so forth. John Stonestreet has a new book out. And he had, actually, this caught my attention one morning last week, actually. He voiced some episodes of the Breakpoint program. And he's saying some very interesting things about the ongoing debate, if it's still a debate, over the definition of marriage in our culture. And I will just tell you this. John Stonestreet will join me for a live interview here in about half an hour from now. What he is saying is absolutely worthy of your attention. I do believe that what he is saying is probably, my guess is that it's upsetting to some. To others, it's probably just quite a surprise and quite a shock. But we're kind of at this stalemate, if you will, in this discussion in our country, and it's contentious, and it's really not moving in a productive direction, at least in my view. And I believe that what John Stonestreet, as best as I understand it, what he is proposing is moving us in a more productive, frankly, more Christ-like and, well, a more productive direction. So John Stonestreet joins me to talk about his new book on the issue of same-sex marriage, and he'll be with us in just about half an hour from now. So stand by for that. When we come back, our great friend Bill Arnold, he hosts Real Recovery Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. Central, here on the Faith Radio Network. Let's talk recovery just a little bit, shall we? And if you're not part of a 12-step group, you don't belong to a recovery group at your church, you know what? There are some genuine things that go on as they pertain to spiritual growth and development, genuine things that go on in those recovery groups. Bill Arnold knows very, very well. We'll check in with him coming up next. 7:07, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go away.
Getting your day started connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
7:09 on the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being here. It's August 1st, and thoughts on the month of August coming up in just a few moments. Oh, sure, I know, it's just another page on the calendar. You know, it just popped up August 1 on the Google calendar when you logged in this morning. But no. There's a history to August. We'll talk about that coming up in just a few moments. How do you react? What happens to you internally when you hear somebody say, "Hi, I'm a Christian and I'm an alcoholic"? Does that make sense to you? I hope by now we've arrived at this place, at least among the Christian church in America, where that does make sense, makes perfect sense. But thank goodness Bill Arnold is here every Sunday evening, 5 p.m., hosting Real Recovery, a program that really kind of does bring human nature and human sin nature and God's redemption together in some very powerful and profound ways. Bill joins us on the guest line now. Bill, welcome back to the program, and thanks for being here.
Good morning, Austin. You know, recovery from addictions, it's a subject with broad appeal, and the show is hosted by two guys with limited appeal, so it's really a perfect combination.
I like that. That's you know, the yin and the yang.
You got it, because, you know, I've never touched drugs or alcohol in my life, and the co-host, George Fraser, has got 29 years of recovery, and he's a licensed chemical dependency counselor. So between the two of us, I have about 25 years of prison ministry on my resume. So it's really a fun combination. You know, in Proverbs 19:3, it says, "People ruin their lives by their own foolishness, and then they're angry at the Lord." You know, sin often prefers to disguise itself as something that you think you deserve. You know, "I've had a really hard day. Boy, I deserve this."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people end up with addictions that define their lives. Now, Sunday night, we're talking to a woman named Heather, and for 12 years, she was an editor, and by day she would edit pastors' books on prayer and parenting, mm-hmm. and by night she would drink herself into a complete oblivion. From a stash of alcohol she would hide in her closet. She actually would hide them in her shoes, her boots. And, you know, you say you can never criticize someone until you walk a mile in their shoes. Well, you could never actually get hers on, because there was always alcohol in them.
Filled with bottles, so, yeah.
Filled with bottles, yeah. So, you know, you talk about what's going on around us, and we're oftentimes just not even aware of what's going on.
Well, you know, and by the way, Bill Arnold, host of Real Recovery on Faith Radio Network, Sunday evenings, 5 p.m., he's with us now on the Austin Hill in the Morning program. I remember the day. I grew up in a household where mom was very adamant that I got to church and Sunday school, and dad was showing up occasionally on Sunday morning, hungover, and eventually my father found recovery, as it were, found sobriety through Alcoholics Anonymous. I kind of grew up in this environment, literally my elementary school years, where mom got me to Sunday school on Sunday morning, but dad got me to an AA meeting on Saturday night. So I grew up sort of surrounded by sort of this 12-step kind of worldview, if you will. And later in my adult years, I saw some great people, folks like yourself and George Fraser and others, who said, "Wait a minute, these things belong together. We if we're to take seriously the doctrine of sin and the doctrines of redemption as they are spelled out in the New Testament, well, that applies even to the person with the sin of a drug problem or a sexual problem or what have you. Let's get honest and bring all these things under the umbrella of the church." And I think that's where you're going with the discussion that you're going to have this Sunday night. Am I right about that?
You are completely right on about that, Austin. You know, Real Recovery, the show, it gathers around the shared belief that there is healing from addictions. And, of course, that requires people to be real and to do it in community. So, you know, Real Recovery is a show where the broken sort of get together and they have their shared beliefs. And, you know, the woman that we're talking to on Sunday night, I mean, she was simply in the cycle of drunkenness over and over and over, and then she was at the point where she would beg God for forgiveness, and then all of a sudden she would, you know, ask God, "Why aren't you delivering me from this?" So
mm-hmm.
she was all over the map and conflicted, and then she had her aha moment, and then she is doing now the hard work of her recovery, which she's been, you know, sober for 5 or 6 years, and she's very productive in her Christian life and her faith, and she's back to work and productive, and her story is very inspirational, and it's something that everybody who follows or suffers with anybody that has an addiction will be encouraged to hear.
Bill Arnold, host of Real Recovery, Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. Bill, what do you say to that person who's listening to us right now And they say, you know, I just don't fit into church because my addiction, my secret sin, my flaws and imperfections, I don't belong there. Nobody will accept me. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. I can't go there. What do you say to that person?
I would say shame on us Christians that make you feel that way. You know, shame on us that we make you feel that way.
Bill Arnold, Real Recovery, Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. We'll be listening. Bill, thanks very much. Good to talk to you.
Terrific, Austin. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. 7:14, it's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Our program continues momentarily. Good morning and welcome to it. The Faith Radio Network is on, and I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8. Thank you for listening, and thanks for your support of what we do. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. And updates on a lady whose name you know, Miriam Ibrahim. She is a young Christian woman, a mother from the Sudan, married to a gentleman named Daniel Wani. Mr. Wani is a naturalized citizen of our country here in the United States. As such, their children are U.S. citizens, and they certainly have ties to the U.S. And, of course, you probably saw those headlines earlier this year. They really started kind of kicking into high gear, late spring, earlier this summer. You saw the very striking photo of the young couple, very attractive young couple. She's a very beautiful young woman. Her husband, Mr. Wani, a handsome young guy. They're dressed up all formally. He's got the coat and tie. She's got the wedding dress. They've got flowers in front of them. It's a formal, professionally done wedding photo. And then the headline read, "Mother sentenced to die." She was sentenced to die by the government of the Sudan because she had embraced Christ. She had claimed Christianity as her faith and rejected the Islamic faith. And as things often go in the Islamic world, their definition of tolerance and diversity is if you don't accept Islam, you are sentenced to die. Well, she was imprisoned. You've heard the story. We had some very thoughtful people here in the United States of America, even folks within our own government, that were pleading for her release to get her reunited with her husband back here in the States, get the kids home. And some very thoughtful people in the government of Italy, they stepped up and acted as sort of a third-party envoy. Well, long and short of it is she escaped twice from prison. And she was released twice from prison is really a better way to put it. She was released once and then rearrested, put back in prison. We were told at times she was literally strapped to the floor of a jail cell. What's that about? Hello? But she was released yet again. And that said, she's back on American soil now. She's anticipated to arrive in the state of New Hampshire today. And this is worthy of our it's worthy of us giving thanks to God for this. But I'll tell you what this also should remind us is that while we celebrate a sister in Christ being released from captivity, having been held in prison for no other reason than the fact that she is a Christian, we also have a lot of other people who are believers in Christ who are risking their very lives, risking torture, risking imprisonment, risking starvation because they won't renounce Christ. Chief among them, of course, Saeed Abedini, the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Boise, Idaho, of all places. He is being held illegally right now in a prison in the country of Iran. So keep praying for that. We've got some info on national and international prayer vigils on behalf of Pastor Saeed Abedini. You'll find those on our program page, the Austin Hill in the Morning program page at myfaithradio.com. But that said, good news, Miriam Ibrahim, who was welcomed by none other than the mayor of the city of Philadelphia, welcomed into the city of brotherly love, Mayor Michael Nutter. She'll now be welcomed into the state of New Hampshire. Kind of continent hopping, I guess she is. And good for her. I'm glad she's able to do that, and I'm glad the family has resources for that. All the details on Saeed Abedini and others at myfaithradio.com. Today, by the way, is the 1st of August. Oh, yes, I know. It's just another page on the calendar, right? But no. That just so you know, and you could share this with your associates, your colleagues, and maybe even pass this on to your kids. It's just, you know, it's good to know about the world, right? August is, of course, the 8th month of the year. That is the case both on the Julian and Gregorian calendars. It is one of only 7 months that last 31 days. Okay, that's kind of cool. You ever had that experience where maybe you talk with somebody, oh, I don't know, maybe in Australia or New Zealand, you know, somebody on the other side of the globe, and you call them at this time of the year, you speak with them, and turns out that they're living out, you know, their winter season right now. How is it over there in the States? Well, it's, you know, it's hot and humid with a high of 90 degrees or whatever. Well, it's snowing, you know, on the beaches of Australia or whatever it is. In the Southern Hemisphere, August is the seasonal equivalent of February in the Northern Hemisphere, exactly 6 months behind us, okay? Now, beyond that, in common years, no other month starts on the same day of the week as August, though in leap years, February starts on the same day of the week. August ends on, I hope you're following this, August ends on the same day of the week as November every year. March and November of the previous year start on the same day of the week as August of the current year as a common year, and June of the previous year starts on the same day of the week as August of the current year as a leap year. I know I lost you on that one. Suffice it to say that it's really cold in other parts of the world here at the start of August, and there's 31 days left here, 30 days ahead of us here in the month of August. Also, August kicks off some very interesting celebrations and traditions, believe it or not, here in the United States. I'll tell you about some of the things that are scheduled to happen, things that happen every year in August here in the U.S. a little bit later this hour. But suffice it to say, and I want to reiterate this to the students in the audience, elementary, junior high, high school, college students, schools just around the country, around the corner. We are well beyond the midpoint of summer. You have things you haven't gotten done yet for the summer months. Get to them, but get focused on school as well, because it's coming up real soon. 7:23, you're listening to Austin Hill in the Morning. My guest, John Stone Street from the Breakpoints Ministry, coming up in just about 11 minutes from now. Stay with us on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support of what we do at myfaithradio.com. I have a commitment. I am committed to dispelling the myth that John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas are actually the same person. They're not. As a matter of fact, my trusted colleague on the other side of the glass booth, Aaron McIntyre, has verified for me. You've actually seen these two gentlemen in the same place at the same time. You verified. You could verify for us. Live, if we were to put a microphone in front of you, you'd confess that Eric Metaxas and John Stone Street are separate human entities, correct? Okay, very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Well, that said, John Stone Street, who along with Eric Metaxas, they are hosts. You don't hear of it at the same time together, but they host the Breakpoint program, what we call a short-form program in the world of media. They also both work with the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview. In all seriousness, John Stone Street has co-authored a brand new book about the definition of marriage. It's entitled Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. He joins us now on the guest line to elaborate on such things. John Stone Street, welcome to our program, sir. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Austin. Good morning.
Good morning. I hope you don't mind us having a little fun along with your name and that of Eric Metaxas. But I'm
no,
sure you've
you heard... know, it's surprising to me how many people say we sound alike on that. I think I talk really fast and he talks really slow. You know, it's backwards because he's in New York and I'm from the South. But it's just kind of the way it is. I don't know. It's a mystery.
It's all good and it works. And next we'll have Mr. Metaxas on the program, and then we'll have some fun with the audio and figure out where that goes. But that said, on a more serious note, your book, you have a new book out, again, the title, Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. Emphasis on thoughtful, at least I'll put an emphasis on that. Where are you going with this book? What's your intention here?
Well, you know, Sean McDowell, my co-author, and I both had the same feeling, which is that this thing we had been kind of hearing about and many cultural commentators had warned about and others had said it's not a big deal was no longer on the horizon. It was actually here. I mean, we were going to have to face this. And this was, and we made this decision, you know, even before, you know, kind of the famed Supreme Court Windsor decision last year, which came short of giving us kind of a Roe v. Wade sort of decision, national legalization of same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? In the popular imagination, it was here. Minnesota is obviously a state that has embraced it. We're dealing with it in Colorado here right now. I mean, right even as we speak. And there wasn't a lot of thoughtfulness behind it. You know, you had one group. Kind of a shrill despair, the world's coming to an end, and certainly we think it's a very, very big deal, but it almost as if this was going to be the end of the kingdom of God, and I thought, wait a minute, my faith is on, you know, based on the risen Christ. On the other hand, you have many, even Christians. I mean, I think in the last month, Austin, we've seen three evangelical pastors also publish books endorsing committed mm-hmm. Same-sex relationships and saying God would bless them. And looking at that going, well, wait a minute, that's out of line with the entire history of the church. Has the entire history of the church been wrong on this? And so we felt like we just needed to address it, and we needed to address it in two levels. One, how to think about it, and two, what do we do living in a culture that now embraces same-sex marriage? And so that's what we wanted to do, and we felt the only way to do that was to start with what is God's design for marriage. If you know what's right, it's a lot easier to identify when something's not right, and that's what we were trying to do.
John Stone Street, he's our guest here on the Faith Radio Network. His new book, Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. It's a part of a Thoughtful Response book series, and he's with us talking about this all-important issue. John, in all seriousness, and I can have fun talking about how you and your co-host Eric Metaxas sound so similar, but it really stood out to me one day last week, one of the Breakpoint programs that aired during this live real-time broadcast. You were, I want to say this gently but forthrightly, you were kind of calling out the church and saying, hey, we've got some attitude changing to do. We don't need to change our theology, but our approach to this issue, at least in the public square anyway, has not at all times been in keeping with God's design, so to speak. I'm paraphrasing here, but elaborate on that if you would, please.
Well, you know, we spent a big part of we spent an entire chapter in the second half of the book, the half which deals with what do we do now, and we spent an entire chapter on repentance. And the reason is we want it to be really clear: same-sex marriage is not the root of the problem; it's the fruit of a larger problem. I mean, you can trace this back. I mean, certainly a lot of people, you know, look back just a few years ago when our president, you know, as he put it, evolved on the issue. And a lot of different things followed that, but this issue was coming way before then. And it has to do with the fundamental definition of marriage. And so in that commentary and in the book, we identify a couple things that we need to, I think, repent of. One is that we haven't upheld God's design for marriage in other ways, outside of same-sex marriage. I think mm-hmm. it was the great G.K. Chesterton who said that there's a lot of ways to fall down. There's only one way to stand up straight. And marriage is this beautiful, wonderful design of God by which he intended to begin civilization. You know, he didn't start the world, you know, with a government or even with the church. He started it, you know, with a wedding. And that's what marriage is. It's a unique institution that identifies a father, mother, and child as a distinct unit upon which other families are, and society itself is going to build. Well, we've treated marriage for a long time, and this goes back to no-fault divorce. It goes back to, you know, the shifting consciousness of whether, you know, we need to stay married or not. It goes back to the different forms of sexual brokenness that we've kind of either tolerated or not directly addressed. I mean, you know, we haven't had a lot of marches against pornography or even a lot of marches against divorce, but it's not lost on the larger culture, and specifically the LGBT community, that we have had a lot of marches on gay marriage, and so when it seems selective because it's almost like we have been selective. The other thing we need, I think, to repent for is you know, we've had this mantra, and it's not a well-stated one, and it hasn't, it's well-intended, but there's a lot of problems with it, but it's this mantra, love the sinner, hate the sin. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you kind of look at our track record, I think by and large, and this isn't for everyone, certainly there have been some heroic individuals that, you know, aren't guilty of this, but we've done a lot of hating the sin, but we never actually got around to loving the sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And biblical love, I was talking about this with my six-year-old daughter the other day, biblical love is not something you fall in, and it's not something that you feel, it's something that you do. Love is a verb. And, you know, that's the issue, is that we never actively went out and tried to love those who were dealing with the bad ideas of the sexual revolution, and who in fact became casualties of the sexual revolution, which gave us all this. And so that's another thing. And so, you know, repentance is the first step to cultural renewal. It is in every historical setting when the church has risen up and done wonderful things. It starts with repentance and what you might call cleaning up our own house.
Yep. John Stone Street, he is the author of a brand new book about same-sex marriage. It's entitled Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. He's with us on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. I want to approach something that you're touching on here. You noted that as it's recorded in the book of Genesis, at the creation of human beings and the earth and such, God begins with a wedding, not with a government. And I would maintain, I probably have a minority view on this among the Christian population in America. I might be surprised at how many people are kind of thinking and feeling as I am, but I believe Christians in the United States of America need to fundamentally rethink their relationship with their government. And I happen to believe on this issue of marriage that we're looking to the government for a little bit too much. You noted earlier, you said, well, you know, my goodness, some people think that if the definition of marriage is changed in our culture, that means the end of the kingdom of God. It most certainly does not. I look at governments, while I don't think it's necessary for a state or a city or a country to be granting licenses for same-sex marriages and such, by the same token, the relative health of the institution of marriage as God designed it, that is not contingent on who gets a marriage license or not. I guess what I'm getting at is it seems to me like there's a couple of different issues here. There's the relative health of marriage within the church, and then there's what civic government does in terms of granting licensures, and those are not the same thing. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Well, you know, that is something I think we've got to explore. In fact, we have a group of experts that chime in the book. We give them a couple pages to answer a question, and one of them is a guy who has been writing about this almost probably longer than anyone. His name is Michael Craven, and he's a wonderful cultural commentator and expert from Dallas, Texas. And
Craven
and
on culture, I believe, is very familiar with
him. Yeah, that's right. That's right, and a great guy, great thinker, and he's exploring this as well, and he suggests that in the book. You know, I'm still struggling with that one, and I think, by the way, it's probably going to become necessary, but we're going to face repercussions of that. I mean, that's one of the things we have to realize is we're going to have to be ready. Right now, it's wedding photographers. Right now, it's wedding providers. Business people who aren't being allowed to distinguish between their convictions and their behavior. That's the language of, you know, Justice Richard Boffin, who wrote a concurring opinion in the Elaine photography case. Elaine Huguenin refused to photograph a same-sex ceremony.
That strikes me as a private property rights issue, not so much a definition of marriage issue. But we need to take a break. Let's continue on that in just a moment. John Stone Street with a new book on same-sex marriage, a very thoughtful book at that. He's our guest. We'll continue in just a moment. It's 7:45. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network.
Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
7:47, John Stone Street, my guest. He is the co-author of a brand new book called Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. John, I don't want to belabor the point, but I want to kind of pick up where we left off, the issue of bakery owners and flower shop owners perhaps being forced to provide their services to same-sex weddings, as it were. We've seen a lot of news coverage about that. Is that a problem with the licensure of same-sex marriages, or is that a problem with the business owner not being allowed to choose when he or she provides their services? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, and yeah, Austin, and I'm glad we can pick back up on that. I think it's just indication, you know, it's that great line from Martin Niemöller, you know, first they came for the communists and I didn't stand up because I wasn't a communist. And I'm thinking to myself, first they came for the bakers and I didn't stand up because I was a pastor. I think bakers first, pastors next. And, you know, this is a, you know, what we've called it on Breakpoint last week, the cultural tsunami. And I think the idea here is it's gone beyond, you know, accommodation to being forced to bless it. And that's just the reality of it. It doesn't change our responsibility. And that's one of the things we want to say in the book is that, you know what, it doesn't matter the legal status whatsoever. The church, you know, renders to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but never to Caesar what belongs to God, you know, in that great last line from the Manhattan Declaration. I just think we're going to have to make that decision anyway is what my point was. But I will say this, Austin, and this is this point of encouragement. I think we need to realize that all forms of sexual promiscuity and different sexual deviations that we have seen, and then blessing them, and not only tolerating them, but blessing them, you know, they have that practice has consequences. People say, well, what's the judgment? What's God's judgment for same-sex marriage? My answer is God's judgment is same-sex marriage. You know, this is the Romans 1. God pulls his hands off and says, now you try it and let's see how it works out. And it won't work out. And we're seeing signs of sexual exhaustion, I think, all around. We had 3 European parliamentarians last year, you know, proposed legislation to ban pornography. Secularists saying this. You're like, wait a minute, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the church is going to be in a wonderful position. I've been speaking to students all summer, Austin, and what I'm telling them is throughout history, there have been moments of where culture has reached points of sexual exhaustion and the church has offered marriage back to it as a good gift. Because marriage isn't just a Christian institution, it's a human institution. It's actually built into what it means to be human relationally together. And when you try it differently, things go wrong. And, you know, you can think about the early Christians, what they did, you know, to the Romans. You can think about, you know, Wilberforce and his crew, how he dealt with a culture in which 25% of the women 13 and over were prostitutes. They offered marriage back as a good gift to the world. And I think the next generation, this emerging generation, is going to have a wonderful opportunity to do that. But that's part of the second half of the book. We've got to get marriage right ourselves, and we've got to be able to talk about it. We've got to be able to be calm. We've got to be able to be winsome, and we've got to actually practice it. And I think, actually, this is going to be a time of potentially great renewal and great revival, not only in the church, but in the culture itself.
That's very well stated. As always, John Stone Street, co-author of Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage. He's on the guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. John, a final question. And by the way, let me just say before we wrap up here, I hope we can continue this conversation. I hope you'll join us again, because I think you have some profound things, profoundly important things to say, and you say them very, very well. Even if it's not pre-recorded, live real time, I appreciate the conversation. It strikes me that if we look at what's going on around the world, you note that what I think you said in the Parliament of the UK, you have some legislative proposals that take a, shall we say, a more Judeo-Christian attitude, a Judeo-Christian response to issues of pornography and sexuality, more so than what we have going on in the USA right now. I could note, I don't follow the marriage debate as you do, but I could note that the countries of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the UK, Germany, even France in many respects, they are moving in the exact opposite direction of our country in terms of public policy and as it pertains to the private ownership of property, free market economics, business enterprise, using God-given natural resources like oil and timber and those kinds of things. And the rest of the world, we're moving to the left, and the rest of the world is kind of slowly moving to the right. You're chuckling, but I think you see that going on yourself. Am I right about that?
Yeah, the only one I would say I don't see that in New Zealand. I've just got some buddies down there, and I'm seeing it move. But I was just actually down in Australia, believe it or not, Austin, just 2 weeks ago with my oldest daughters. What a great trip that we had of speaking down there. And that's certainly the case with many, many countries. Because, you know, there comes a cap, there just comes a place where kind of radical multiculturalism, which becomes kind of radical moral relativism on a cultural level, just doesn't work out. I mean,
to your point,
competing definitions.
Yeah, and to your point on the cultural issue, I saw an editorial that appeared in a U.S. American publication. I won't say the name, but it was lambasting the Prime Minister of the U.K. because he stood up and said, we need to reunite and reaffirm our UK culture. And in a Christian publication in the U.S., we say, oh, that's just, you know, that's hate speech and that's naughty and whatever. I just see the rest of the world having tried some of these things, like same-sex marriage and other more liberal ideas, shall we say. To your point, they're kind of moving back in the other direction, saying, that didn't work. We need to get back to what does work. And it sounds like you're observing that.
I think so, yeah. And the question is, then, how do you actually make that cultural shift? Because, you know, one of the things we argue about or argue in the book is that this didn't happen, first of all, through politics. It happened in culture. I mean, this is one of those things, not always the case, but very often that culture is upstream from politics. You know, we note, for example, the shift from The Cosby Show when we were growing up in the 80s to Modern Family today. I mean, that's just three decades. I mean, that's pretty astonishing. You know, the teen drama that scandalized our parents growing up was Beverly Hills 90210, where they talked about sex but never actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today to Glee, and they're not only doing it, they're, you know, it's heterosex, homosex, bisex, pansex. I mean, it's everything, and they're actually doing it, and because they're singing about it, the parents don't seem nearly as scandalized these days as they were back then. These are pretty significant cultural shifts. So there's going to be cultural work to do, but I think that's really what some of these politicians are saying. It's going to be interesting what it means to really wrestle at the church with what it means to be faithful in the American context after, you know, that cultural power is lost. And it clearly is. You know, as my friends over at the Acton Institute in Grand Rapids, you know, say, we're kind of in a time of exile. And first-generation exilers, we like to complain about what we lost. Second-generation exilers have to wrestle with whether they're going to be Babylonians or Israelites. And third-generation exilers have to realize, well, what is it going to mean to live for the good of the city?
Yep.
And to plant, you know, as what Jeremiah, you know, told the Israelites, plant vineyards, have babies, and help the city flourish, because as it flourishes, so will you.
And that, John Stumpstreet, we're just about out of time. Are we second or third exilers? Quick.
I hope we can skip second and go right to being third, because it's way more beneficial.
You are a bright light in troubled times. John Stumpstreet, thank you, John,
thank
for
you,
joining us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Good to be with you. It's 7:56. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. On the Faith Radio Network, I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings from 6 till 8 in the morning. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support of what we do here at the Faith Radio Network. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. And this concludes, can you believe it's been a month? This is the fourth week, right, Aaron, on the other side of the glass booth? Yes, I've been here hosting the morning program for a month now, and it's an honor to be here weekdays. I'm still here on Saturdays. You can hear me noon to 1 p.m. Central Time for my weekend program, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, where we seek to understand business and making a living and issues of the economy through the lenses of our Christian faith. There's been some big news in the labor markets and employment and in our economy over the course of this last week. We'll sift through the details. Hope you'll join me tomorrow, Saturday at noon on the Faith Radio Network. Have a great weekend, and thank you for listening. It's myfaithradio.com. Have a great day ahead. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.